Hey everybody, it's me, Bonnie Somerville. Welcome back to Second Act. Very excited that you are still with me. Don't forget to download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. I have to say that. They make me say that, and I'm already bored of myself. But do that so that I could keep going and give me a 5-star review, because apparently these things are important, kind of like Oscars, but not really, because no one really cares, but other people do. So do that for me, and don't forget to follow my new Instagram page. It's second_act_podcast on Instagram. And also my personal is Bonds with a Z, Somerville, on Instagram. And I've been hearing from a bunch of you. I want to hear more from you and get some questions and stuff so I could do the question and answer segment that I really want to do, which is probably, I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea, but it's probably a good idea because I have no shame and I'll answer anything pretty much. So do that. My next guest is an awesome guy. He's been working forever. He has had so many acts, which is part of why I find him so fascinating. Like people that have had to pivot and start over and get over injuries or get over loss or get over failure. That's what this whole entire podcast is about. And he has had so many amazing acts. He is the very handsome and talented Lachlan Munro. I tried to say that with a Scottish accent. Lachlan Munro. No, that was terrible. And you probably know him from Riverdale, which was like bananas huge. And he's just an awesome guy. And here you will hear us talk about everything. So open and honest and warm. And hope you enjoy this, my interview with Lachlan. I'm very excited. My next guest, I have to say, I'm partial to Scottish men. I do have a little, I'm Scottish myself, and very sexy name. Somebody who has done everything. Talk about second act. This is the type of person that I want to talk to because he has had a million of them. Everybody, please welcome Lachlan Munro. Did I say that right?
That was perfect.
No, you say it.
Lachlan Munro.
Lachlan Munro.
There you go.
Oh, sexy. Hi.
Hi, Bonnie. Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on.
Oh, gosh. Are you kidding? I love it. I was so excited that when Angie asked me to do this with you. And yeah,
Thank you. Here we are. Let's say Angie, we'll give a little shout out, is our mutual manager.
Yes, of course.
Who I adore.
Yeah, she's absolutely fantastic.
And she is, talk about a fan of yours. I mean, really a big fan. And I adore her. So thank you so much for doing this. You're so busy. You're all over the place. You're actually one of the few, like, really, really working actors right now. I don't say that with jealousy. I say that with, like, praise.
Well, yes, because, you know, we've both been in the game a long time. And you know, you have to have, like, I have utmost mutual respect for people that have been in this game as long as we have, because it's not easy. Everyone thinks it's, like, you know, you get a couple of movies under your belt and it's clear sailing. And They have no idea, you know.
They have no idea. And part of the impetus for this show, I don't know. Well, I know you, like, probably looked it up, but it came at a time when I had been fired from my very first show at 42. And I had this streak of, like, I was that girl that literally couldn't not get a pilot, you know, couldn't not get a job or a deal. Mm-hmm. And then personally, everything crashed. Stepdad died. Show got canceled. Dropped my managers of 20 years, and I just hit this funk. And I'm sure you can relate. But people like us, like you say, that have been doing this a long time. Not being married. You know that whole thing. I just was in such a funk, and my best friend was like, you know, you just need to find your second act. And I was like, how many people have stories of inspiration like you, and we'll get into that, all the stages of your life, that, like, what you thought was going to be your job, and then what do you do? Like, you can't just sit down and do nothing, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So can we talk about your, origins and how you started as a super jock? was that your first title?
I didn't really feel like I had any choice. You know, I grew up in the northern part of Canada in British Columbia.
I'm sorry. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, really. I'm sorry.
I grew up
in a town where I was the only kid in grade one.
What town did you grow up in?
It's a little town called Lac La Hache, which means Lake of the Axe. And
that near Edmonton? I'm just curious.
No. Edmonton's in Alberta. I'm on the other side of the Rocky Mountain Range there.
Okay.
Sorry. Okay. And let me just tell you, that was just such a typically American thing you just said, you know?
No, don't say that. Now I hate myself.
I'm kidding. It's just, I always poke fun at all my good friends in the States. They'll say, hey, Locke, I'm in Calgary doing a film. Let's grab some coffee. And I'm like, you're a time zone and a mountain range away from me.
Can I just say really quickly, being from Brooklyn, I do get that a lot. Everybody assumes that we all know each other and that we all talk like this and like, oh, your dad, you know that. So I apologize for my ignorance, but I get it.
Wow. So, okay. So where this would be is just so about 7 hours north of Vancouver is where I grew up.
Okay.
And so very small town, and I grew up on a lake. I grew up on a big 12-mile lake. So really my winter sports were, you know, we'd shovel off the ice and I skated. And so I became proficient at that only for that's my hobby. It was my hobby. And then it turned into sort of something that I thought I was going to do for my whole life.
And you were really good.
I guess, I was just good because I did it a lot, you know, like,
humble Canadian.
You know,
so,
and so I moved on to play. I moved away from home at 15 and I moved around to play on sort of elite, like in these teams. And
15.
So what happened was I broke my femur really bad. I broke my femur when I was 18 years old, and it really, you know, kind of a really bad time in a sort of athletic career to break a bone like that and for how long it takes to heal. But up until then, you know, I also played music in high school. So
I want to get into that after. We do have that in common.
Right. Okay. So yeah. So
what point in your career athletically though, did this happen? Did this happen when like people were like scouting, when you were like, okay, yes, I'm going to be pro?
Exactly. Yeah. So
right at the moment.
Right. So being scouted for, you know, the NHL, being scouted for colleges in the States, stuff like that. And so when I broke my leg, I decided that I would, you know, I had nothing to do. So I thought, you know, I was a drummer singer in high school bands. I really enjoyed that aspect of things. I had to kind of put it on the back burner because of how much time I needed to devote to sports. Mm-hmm. And so while I was laid up, I taught myself to play guitar and I fell in love with it. And so I didn't go back to hockey. I started to play music around pubs and places around Vancouver and up at like the Whistler Ski Resort, you know, Whistler Blackcomb.
Yes.
And so I used to play pubs and stuff up there. And I started to meet people in the arts and entertainment industry right around sort of 86 or so.
Yes.
And that's right when Stephen Cannell brought up like 21 Jump Street and all those shows. And so those were the first shows that I ever started to audition for.
Yeah.
And
by the way, not to fangirl out, but the fact that you were on 21 Jump Street is, for me, a 46-year-old woman, kind of a big deal.
Well, yeah, we all had I had a man crush on Johnny too.
I'm aging myself, but like, yeah. Well done.
Yes. So
can I just ask you, do you remember the moment that like that happened with your leg? Like, is that, I'm just curious, like, do you remember that moment? Like, was that like, not a second act thing, but was that one of those things? Cause I've had them that you're just like, oh shit. Like, do you remember consciously going, this might be not work out, or were you not?
I was laying on the ice in the game, cause it happened during the game. And I remember laying there going, okay, this isn't just a moment where I take my breath and it was a little stinger and you walk it off. I was on the ice thinking, wow, I've never had this sort of pain and I don't know what this is. So they called, you know, I had to be taken off stretcher and, you know, it's just, so I was lucky that one of the team owners was very good friends with tons of the people involved in the Vancouver Canucks at the time. And so I went right from the ice to Vancouver General Hospital, and I had the orthopedic surgeon from the Vancouver Canucks actually did my surgery.
Now, were you pro or you were?
Well, see, I was playing sort of at that level of just underneath, kind of like
But everybody was like,
everyone's.
Lachlan's going pro.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, I
I know.
mean,
I mean,
I was a good player. You know, would I have gone pro? You know,
but that was the plan.
800 people play in the NHL. That's the tough odds, right? But
So you're
but
not.
I would have definitely gone on, whether it be maybe go to Europe and play pro, maybe to go play in the AHL. It doesn't always have to be the NHL, but you know, here's the
You
thing is that
remember that moment? You remember that moment of going, oh shit, this might not be the plan.
yeah, and I
Yeah.
especially remember it while I was trying to heal and trying to get back because it just took forever. Just took forever. I had one more season to kind of prove myself, and I just realized that, man, I'm not going to get back in time for these scouts to actually go, okay, this is our guy. So I was really lucky that I really sort of fell in love with the music again, you know. And
And was your family, I'm just curious, because like we can go the once we get into the music thing, we have that in common. Was your family and surrounding people, were they pressuring, like, were they
No.
pressuring? No, they were like, if you don't want to do this, you don't want to do this.
Yeah, for sure. I've never been pressured by my family for anything, with
Okay.
even the industry. Like, I'd never had any pressures of, are you sure you really want to try and be an actor? You know, they're like, no one gave me that, you know?
Lucky you. Wait,
Yeah.
did you guys at least win the game or what?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Okay, so you're in the hospital,
Yeah.
you're healing, and you start doing music, you teach yourself guitar, and was that an act? Like I always think of my life as act breaks, like hence
Oh,
second act.
definitely,
Was
definitely.
that an act break where you went, huh?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
That happened then.
Yeah, I just like it, and it made me realize how much I used to love it. And once I got into sort of taking theater and doing classes and just being involved, I realized then that even when I was a teenager, how much movies affected me way more than any of my friends. And I realized that then. So, you
So
know,
by the
to
time you were healed with your leg, you were like, okay, I don't want to be an athlete.
yeah,
I
I
want to be
decided that I wanted to go a
an artist.
different direction. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then where did you go after that? What was your
So I was in Vancouver at the time, and I started to meet a lot of people through the arts, just because of the music. And they were, you know, all of a sudden people are like, you know, we do this, we take these classes, we, and the funny thing is, you know, my first classes were with an actor named Peter Breck, who played Nick Barkley on, you know what I'm, the show I
Yes.
mean,
Yeah.
with
What's the
Majors
show?
was his brother. And
Yeah.
was
What's
it Green, it wasn't Green Acres, was
it?
it?
No, it was it Anna Green Gables?
No, gosh. He was the brother that always wore the leather vest at Cowboy
Yes,
Show with
I'm blanking.
I am too. I'll figure it out. And so I started to take these classes and just fell in love with it. And we started to perform and do all these showcases and
And you were
plays.
playing in pubs at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And I got a waiter job at night as well, you know, to just kind of keep everything going. And then
Were like, this is it. This is it.
I don't know. I just kept going. I never, you know, I think I was just naive enough not to give myself a plan B, you know. I think that's what it might have been.
That's what I. Let me ask you a
So
question, though. Was there any part of you, and I'm just curious because I asked this from a lot of my actor friends. And like me, when the hockey thing went away, was there any part of you at all that was like hanging on to it,
no.
or were you just like sure? Were you like that train left the station? See,
Yeah,
that's how
it
it's
was
got.
way weird. I never like, I mean, I love the sport. The cool thing is that I, you know, through being able to do TV shows and movies and stuff, I've played in so many amazing like charity hockey games with,
Yes, I
you know,
read that about you. My
oh
God.
gosh, like everywhere. I've played in every NHL building that I could ever dream about playing in as a hockey player, right? So Boston Garden, Philly Spectrum, Madison Square Garden, you name it, like
Get
just,
the perks of being an actor, right? And going to
yeah,
those places.
so lucky, yeah.
So now you're at
So,
this place. So you're doing the music, and you're taking the classes now. And I'll this is where we have in common. So I had a record deal before I was an actress, right? I was 17, but I always wanted to be an actress, but I was in a band and I was discovered and I was from Brooklyn, no money. And it was kind of like, my mom was like, okay. But in the back of my mind, even though everyone was like, oh my God, you're an amazing singer, I was like, but I want to be an actress. Like, even when things were going, did you have that? Like when you were singing, when you were in a band, did you have that? Like, but I think I kind of want to be an actor.
You know what? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. Because I mean, I think I was pretty good at, you know, I think I have an okay voice. I think I play guitar pretty well. And we were just, you know, every once in a while we do songs we've written, but we did a lot of covers. I was just playing pubs, but I enjoyed it. Right. It was just, yeah. I was making money playing some music. Yeah. So I don't think I was quite at your level at that. But when I got involved in the film stuff, I was like, that's when I realized, I was like, oh my God,
yeah.
This is like, I think what I was meant to do.
And did people ask you, like people always asked me, because I had a song on the Garden State soundtrack that I wrote and it, you know, won the Grammy best soundtrack and it was a blessing, but people would ask me, especially, I know, you know, as a musician, my fiance is a musician. He loves music. Like people that really love music, they always say, why don't you sing more? And did people say to you like, but you should, right? Like some people have a hard time going, why would you choose acting over music, right? Because some people are really like, if you could be a musician, that's the
right. I know even as actors sometimes we always say that, right? Like musicians want to be actors, actors want to be musicians.
Yeah.
I can definitely say now, as much as I love my job, I mean, to stand in front of a live audience in Madison Square Garden and just to play one power A chord over the amps, I mean, just give me that once. Just let me do a one power A chord and I'll walk off just happy.
By the way, my fiance is sitting over there and he just went, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Could you imagine just, oh.
Les Paul or Fender?
I play Fender, yeah. Tellys and Strats, man. Tellys and Strats, you know?
You know what my fiance got for Christmas? A Fender bass. Just not, I don't want to say I'm the best fiance ever, but.
That's awesome. Tell Dave my dream amp is a 212 Music Man. Tell me he knows someone who has one for me.
I don't know anyone that has one, but let's track one down.
Oh my gosh.
So you had that. I'm only asking because I'm not every actor is a musician, but I would literally be on sets and actors would be going, and you and I started back in the day. I always try to explain this. You and I started back in the day where you couldn't be everything. Remember? It was like, if you're a musician, if you're a model, you're going to do a soap opera. If you do commercials, you're never going to be a real actress. If you're a music, like, remember that those days?
Sure. If you do TV, you don't do movies.
And now I'm looking at these kids on Instagram. I'm going, it's so unfair because we were so boxed in, but I had people going, why would you want to be an actress if you sing all the time? And I don't know if you had this, I could never explain like, I love music. I mean, I'm a music freak, but like something about acting, I don't know how to explain it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, really you portray characters when you sing through emotion or whatever your dialogue is or whatever lyrics you've written, but there's just something about jumping into another skin, right? And playing someone else. Yeah.
I've tried to explain it. I mentor a couple of young girls and they're like, but you can sing and, you know, you can play guitar and it is an amazing talent, but it's curious talking to a musician who did it in pubs like I did. And I waited tables and I would have conversations on sets where they'd go, why aren't you like, you can sing, like, why would you want to do this? And I'm curious, you get it. Like, I couldn't explain, like, singing to me is an amazing, and writing music is an amazing experience, but stepping into someone else's, I don't know. Can you explain? I'm always trying to explain. It's different, right?
Yeah, because it's a way of expressing yourself. I know sometimes I love playing characters when I know that that character is hard for me to portray because it, you know, maybe because I have you know, I may not be able to be vulnerable, or I may, and so when I can play emotions through other people that I can't always do as myself, I think that's what the, that's what it's all about, you know?
So when did you get to the place where you really got to, okay, no more music, acting? Was that another act? That's another act.
Okay. Well, okay. So let's go to, which it'll be interesting because I know you're a 21 Jump Street fan. So,
oh my God,
I'll tell you a really funny story then. So I went for my very first audition in Vancouver for the TV show, 21 Jump Street. So I'm so I go to my audition. My first audition ever, I booked the part. So I booked my very first audition. Isn't that crazy? So I'm on set and I'm looking around my first day on set, my first day ever being paid as an actor. I'm like, wow, this is like, I can't believe it. I'm getting paid as an actor. I'm standing on the set looking around and a guy comes up behind me, taps me on the shoulder and he goes, hey bro, I'm just heading out to grab a Coke from craft service. You want anything? I go, no, I'm good. Thanks. He goes, oh, hey, I'm Johnny. And I went, oh, hi Johnny. I'm Lachlan. And he walked away from me. I swear to you, this happened in 1987. I remember the moment. He walked away from me and I remember watching him walk away going, holy shit, I'm not sure what a movie star is, but I think I just met one. Because I didn't know who he was.
No, nobody did.
But I'll tell you, over the years of 21 Jump Street shooting in Vancouver, I did 5 or 6 episodes, right, of different characters.
Okay? Right.
So I kind of got, I did this one great episode that Mario Van Peebles directed, mm-hmm. and it was like a Fame episode, and it was when Richard Grieco came on the show the first year. Mm-hmm. And so I got to play drums in Johnny's band.
Oh, right. No way.
Yeah, that was a cool episode. It won some awards. It was called High High, like H-I-G-H apostrophe H-I-G-H. And it was so much fun because that's, I got to play this character named Kirby and I'm like playing drums and Johnny's in the music, and you know, so we're in the music section of the Fame school and Johnny's in there undercover, but he's playing guitar and you know what I mean? It was just so much fun.
So and, surreal. So
and
surreal.
He was just so like man crush. Like everyone wanted to be that guy. And I swear to God, he was the one that started the grunge movement, I think, in Seattle. Because he dressed like that. He dressed like that way before Pearl Jam and all those guys dressed like that. You know,
he always was that bad boy. Did you get to talk like real music with John? Like, did you ever
have here and there? Because he, you know, I got to tell you, he was so not interested in being on that show.
Oh, that's what I heard.
Right. And I look at it, I look at that two ways because I go, you know, that was a big stepping stone for him to carry on to what he's doing. Though who's to say that that would never happen? Because the guy really is uber talented, right? I mean, you look at his choices in movies, right, Bonnie? And I got to tell you, like, he is a true artist. Like he could have sold out into playing anything that Hollywood wanted him to play. And look at the body of his work; it's pretty amazing.
It is amazing, but it's like what you and I, Lachlan, were just talking about. Like he was, because when you and I started, like when I was in a box, they were like, "Well, you can't be a model and anything." Then I broke that box. Then they were like, "Well, you're a singer, you can't be an actress." He was one of the first, like a George Clooney.
Yeah.
That broke, you know, did that TV to film thing. Yeah, and people, these young kids today don't realize that was like I remember my agent going, "Yeah, if you do this, you can't do this." And it's like nowadays these kids, I mean, it's just such a different world, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yeah. Yet YouTube stars are becoming film stars, right? It's
don't
crazy.
Don't get me started. You're nice and you're Canadian, so I know you won't talk trash.
Yeah, so that was my first
That was your first talk about acts, right? So hockey, music, 21 Jump Street. So that's a big second act. I call them all second act because there's second act to me means everything. So that was a huge second act, right?
And it was a transform. It's a life transformation. That
game changer.
And it was all over, really. if you believe in it or not, it was kind of a divine intervention, because maybe if I didn't break my leg, I wouldn't have found this path. But because I broke my leg, I found this path, right?
Well, I have a lot to say on that too, about like, you know, my life experience. Like if I hadn't gone through all the pain I'd gone through, I know for a fact, I wouldn't have met my fiance now. And, and I'm now this 46-year-old poster child for like getting engaged and getting married. And like, I truly was like, no, that's never going to happen for me. And I was a bridesmaid and have five godchildren, but I truly believe everything that I had to go through to get to this bottom pit, to this podcast, it had to happen because I, you know, a little spoiled, things coming easy, whatever it is. So you get 21 Jump Street. Now, were you, were you signed? Did you have reps at the time?
Yes, I did. I actually, I had a rep in Canada who came out and watched our showcases that we used to do, from the Peter Brex Academy. Peter. So, and she asked me if I would like to be rep for film and television. And I said, yeah, sure, that'd be great. And that woman is still my agent in Canada.
No way.
33 years.
No way.
Yeah.
In Canada?
In Canada, yeah.
God, does she want to take on an American girl? I'm looking for Canadian. You know, I love that so much. And that like makes me a little sad. I mean, like this whole podcast is about being honest. Like one of my biggest transitions, I parted ways with my managers of 22 years. And I love that you're still with your team, because it was worse than a divorce, worse than a breakup, because you know, they know everything.
But again,
sometimes you have to walk through painful things. Like you had to have a painful leg break. Speaking of which, you are the actual embodiment of break a leg.
Yeah, exactly. When people say, hey, break a leg, I'm like, well, yeah.
You're like, been there, done that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Talking about 21 Jump Street, which I'm so fanning out, because I know that you did that. And 46 years, that was the, ladies, young ladies, you don't realize that was the show. Like it was it. Mm-hmm. And you did five episodes of that show,
five or six. Yeah.
And so do you think, like, again, was that your act? Was that like a boom? Was that like a, like for me, Friends was a game changer.
I don't think so yet. What happened after that is, in Canada, I did a TV show in Canada for 4 years. That was a Canadian show. It was called, Northwood.
Northwood.
So that was sort of like, a 90210 of Canada.
Yeah.
And it was a big show because it was on CBC, and you know, Canadian television is a little different. Like CBC is something that everyone in Canada gets because it's that kind of station. And
that,
so
heartthrob, that was your first heartthrob status.
Yeah, well, I get
it. I know about that show.
So then from there, I ended up doing, you know what, from there, I actually did this at the same time. So I was very fortunate in it. I put myself on tape for Clint Eastwood, and I ended up in the movie Unforgiven.
I was going to mention it, but now that you did.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. But that was kind of the first, like that was my first.
Do you think that was your act? Like when I say second act.
Like at that point, I was like, when I was on that set, I was like, man, this feels like this is how Hollywood works, right?
Okay, yeah. So I was going to ask you about that. So that is part of the journey. And so that I was going to ask you about that. So you get Unforgiven.
Yeah.
Amazing. By the way, brilliant. Amazing.
Talk about it. Talk about an acting class, right? I sat on set. I never left.
Okay. So that was, as far as second acts go, that was an actual coherent, like this is a next act.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know,
I did star
in the movie with them, but I was there quite a bit, and you know, I had some good scenes in the movie, but it was
Yes, you did.
It was just really a great, you know, to sit and watch Hackman and Morgan Freeman and Eastwood and Richard Harris. I mean, that was special. And to be in a movie that won an Academy Award, I mean, so special, right?
Do you think, and I can just share with you, I was in A Star Is Born but I was cut out. But I worked for 2 weeks and my role was on the cutting room floor. But I don't know if this is similar to you. I never left set. And I did a show with Bradley Cooper, so I knew him because we did Kitchen Confidential together.
Right.
But I thought, and I don't know if you, did you think, okay, this is it. Like now I'm going to be, honestly, in movies, because I could be shamefully honest. I really thought like, okay, this is it. Like, did you have that feeling? Like, okay.
No. You know what? I didn't. I really didn't. I knew that I was in something special, but I didn't feel like, you know, for what I did in the movie that, you know, it was like, okay, I'm just going to burn down to Hollywood now. People are going to offer me movies. But I do have a moment where I felt that, like a little farther on in our story, I'll tell you when I felt that.
Okay. You have to tell me that. And tell me about that moment on Unforgiven. What was the moment? Tell me what happened.
Okay. So, well, the moment on Unforgiven for me was just, just absorbing, learning, listening, just like, listen, it's emulating, you know what I mean? Like I took everything I could from Gene Hackman, the way he carried himself on set, the way he confidently created his character, the way he was, like, just like, that's who I've always wanted to be. Like people always say, oh man, don't you wish you were Tom Cruise? I'm like, no, man, I want to be Jeff Bridges. I want to be Gene Hackman. Like those are the guys, man. Like Christ, if I could be the character in Crazy Heart, are you kidding me?
Oh, stop it.
Come on. There you go. Now, if you said, Lachlan, when did you find the moment? I'd go, well, Bonnie, I could quit the job now because there you go.
Okay. That is my example that I always say. It's not like the beautiful. No, that's not. It's that. Take my heart and step on it. Oh.
Love that. I love that movie.
Did you have any moments where you were really scared? Like when Clint, I'm just curious, when is it? Oh, this is a good question for the audience. Yeah. Is it true that he doesn't say action?
Yeah.
And is it true that he just leaves you alone? And like, it's just, that sounds bananas to me. Tell me what it's like when you're shooting with him.
So here's a couple of things that happened that I'll never forget. So yes, he stands beside the camera. He doesn't stand in front of a monitor. He may do that now. He didn't then. Stands beside the camera and he goes, go. That's what he does.
But how do you hear him?
He just says, go.
Everybody's quiet.
Yeah. Oh, I've never been on such a respectful, quiet set in my entire life. And then he just goes, cut. And then he looks over at his DP, because I remember his DP was Jack Green. He goes, Jack. And Jack sits in front of the monitor. He goes, yeah, Clint, look good. Okay, let's move on. Like, there's no, like, you were 12 hour days. That's it, man. That movie, like.
Did you ever say, well, do you want to say like, can I go again? Or?
No, I didn't, because, you know, I was still pretty, I mean, I wasn't like I was really green, but I was like, I'm not going to question Clint Eastwood. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm just,
not great, yeah.
He thought it was good. Like, and I'd watched him up until then. Like, I mean, he didn't really tell Hackman or any of those guys what to do. They like.
That makes me nervous hearing that. Like,
oh
just.
Gosh, it was so good. And then I remember one of the camera operators that he would always stand beside, his name is Steve Campanelli, who's gone on to actually direct some pretty cool movies.
Yeah.
Very, very well known. He still operates for Clint. Like, he's Clint's guy, right?
Right.
And he's a Canadian guy. And he came up to me, he goes, hey, when you did your scene, because I improvised a little bit, you know, I was just creating a character. I was just naive enough to improv, right? Like, it's like the young Canadian guy's going to decide that he's going to improv in Clint Eastwood.
Not naive. I think it's freedom when you're on a set where you feel free, right? Yeah. Okay.
So he looked at Steve Campanelli after he called cut of one of my scenes, and he goes, you know, do you know the kid with the chiclet teeth? I really like his energy. So Steve Campanelli told me that. But and then the other story about that one, Bonnie, is the famous scene when he walks in to avenge Morgan Freeman's death inside the bar. Mm-hmm. And he walks up to the bar and he goes, who's the fella that owns this shit house? You fat man, speak up. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I watched him at that point of how the shooting sequence of the movie, I'd only seen Clint in a t-shirt and jeans. He went off set to transform into William Money. and he came back and he did that scene with the brim low and he looked up in the shadow of his eyes. And I was standing behind the operator when that happened because I was in that scene.
Yeah.
And man, the hair on the back of my neck stood up when he did that scene because I went, oh my God, there's Clint Eastwood. Like, there he is.
So did he have, because people always ask me about when I'm acting and I have some actors I've worked with that do, did he have that like true one character when you're being yourself and then one character where you're like, shit's on?
Totally. Because the first time I met him, I was shocked. I thought I was going to meet Dirty Harry. I thought I was going to meet that guy.
And he was like your nice grandpa.
Right. I just met a really soft spoken man who didn't like his demeanor was always the same. He just was, like, so confident. Right. Like just man. So he's so magnetic because he's so confident. And so then the funny thing is in the scene, he goes, anyone who doesn't want to get shot better go on out back. Right. And so all of us young cowboys that were the ones who were part of like, you know, the group that, you know, cut up all the horrors at the beginning, we ran out the back. And
that's
so
a great quote. Can I use that quote for Dave, for our Instagram post, the ones who didn't want to cut up all the whores for the
Yeah, well, yeah, we were the ones of the group. That's why those whores hired William Money to shoot, kill us all, right?
That's right. So he comes back and
so I went up to Eastwood. I went up to Eastwood, I swear to you. And I said, you know, Clint, I actually was hiding behind the post right there and I had a beat on you. And I think I probably could have taken you out. And he looks, Bonnie, he looks at me and he goes, maybe next time.
Bravo. Right? That's balls. You gotta, you know, you having even that connection, you know, sometimes you gotta just go for it.
Maybe that's next
time. Awesome. Oh my God. I love that story.
Crazy.
So let me ask you, after you've had that directing as a fellow actor, do you feel like, Was that better or what's the ideal way to be directed? Or was that just a special?
Gosh, you know, it's funny you say that because, you know, as an athlete, I love to be coached, right? Like I love coaching. I mean, you know, I like
training.
I love to hash things out and get perspective and ideas and, you know, but I do respect guys. And I've heard Rob Reiner's like this. I don't know, but he's someone who doesn't really direct too much. He just keeps you on the path, right? So Clint, if he sees something that felt like it was off the path, as far as even with all the other actors, I could see him just go up and it would just be a calm, quiet conversation. And then that was it. But there wasn't much of it. Like there wasn't much of it. He basically was a guy that kind of hired people to create those characters and he trusted them to do it. And that's not to say, like, I mean, I've been fortunate to be in, you know, and there's not always shows that I've been the regular cast in, but some certain episodics that I've done, I've really enjoyed and it's been a creative process. But you're right. It's like,
some are just a job.
Yeah, exactly.
I always say
that. No, I got to tell you, I did an episode of Without a Trace sometime in the mid 2000s. And it was fucking phenomenal. Excuse my language. It was.
Oh my God. The Canadian man curse. Can we put that on a loop? Say it again.
It was one of the most enjoyable projects I've ever done. The character I created and Anthony LaPaglia.
Oh my God.
He is phenomenal. Right.
I had the same thing. I did an episode of SVU, Law and Order. It was on my bucket list. It was one of the most unbelievable, not only creative, but I said to all my acting friends that I kind of coach, I said, it made me feel a little bit ashamed because I've been on shows where, you know, I kind of have phoned it in or maybe I wasn't that nice to the guest. I'm honestly, or going through stuff. I could not believe Mariska Hargitay's commitment to detail. I could not believe how welcoming, how, and the fact that she's what, 13 years, oh, I don't know, 13, and she is, everything is important. And I was like, you know what? That was one of the best acting I've ever done because of her.
Right.
And I've been the leads of shows.
I mean,
she, her quality was, and made me better.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, people always say, "Oh, what, you know, out of all the stuff you've done, what?" And I go, "Man, I got to tell you, I've been very fortunate to work a lot, but I really do go back to that one episode of Without a Trace because it was such an amazing character and the way it was shot, it was so filmic and it was
What
just so
people
good."
care, it because
Right.
you and I are old timers, and like sometimes it is a job. And like, look, we got to pay the bills, you know, you have kids,
Absolutely.
but sometimes those jobs happen. So, okay, wait. So, after Unforgiven, so unlike me, you didn't think that you're going to be on the cover of Vanity Fair because you're not as vain as I am.
Yeah.
Did you? So, that was, but that was an act change, right? That personally.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I mean, you know, as far as my, as far as I go, that was, you
Like,
know, that was the difference between playing in the AHL and playing in the NHL
oh, so
for
that,
me, right?
so after that, at this point, you're were you all in with the acting? And were you
Yes.
like, you were like,
No.
okay, I'm all in,
Yeah. At that point,
no
I'd
fucking
already
around.
been.
Excuse my
Yeah, and
cursing.
I was all in before that point as well. You know, as soon as I got the lead on my Canadian show, and the great thing about that Canadian show was that it was a great way to learn without being put on the stage like American television, like, you know, because I started out in the industry up here with Priestley, with Jason, right? So, you know, we used to go out on set on 90210 and
Wait,
hang out and all
wait,
that,
wait,
but.
wait. Sorry. You just under your breath went, I started out with Priestley, you know, Jason. I will have you know, my very second job I ever booked was 90210.
No. Well, there
Yes,
you go.
but I got to play Dylan's girlfriend.
Oh, Lukey Luke, hey.
But did you play hockey with Jason? Of course you did.
Oh yeah.
Did you and Michael Vartan?
Yes, I've played with Michael before, yeah.
Anyway, you just but
Yes. Yeah.
so
So,
that.
you know,
Like you're
Jay,
all in.
when Jason got that show, I mean, we were all like all of our young group of guys that hung out all the time, you know, we were like, man, Jay got the show. And, you know, but then, you know, it was such a big stage. So for
That was
him,
bananas.
right, for him, you know, he was still learning and moving and dipping his toes, and but he had to do it in front of the world. I got to do it in front of Canadian television fans, right? So there was lots of room for me to make mistakes and, you know, learn from it. And just so it was a great learning thing for me, that TV show. And so, but that was when I knew I was all in. Then Unforgiven came, and then I started to make my way into down to LA. And so the very first show I ever booked in LA was the TV show Blossom. And Bill Bixby directed it.
Oh my God.
Yes, Bill Bixby. He was sick with the cancer at that time, and he actually passed away 5 days later. Yeah, because he directed it. I remember him. He was pretty sick, and so he directed it from a couch, you know, like the sitcom world where they're in the booth downstairs or wherever the hell they are in the basement. They talk to you over the loudspeaker. And,
And that
yeah.
connects to my dear friend Jesse Bochco, right? Bixby was in that world.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. So that was your first. Okay. So here, so this act is so here we get to now we're working in
Yeah.
the
So
US.
now I'm in LA, and now I
Now
feel
you're in
like
LA and you're doing
made
it.
my way a little bit into the bigger leagues, right? Yeah.
Right. Well,
Not
good.
that, you know, because I was doing American television in Vancouver as well, but you know, it just felt different. It felt different to be in LA and actually booking jobs as an actor, you know.
So what was your like absolute like was there a moment that was like I say but like for me like was there a moment in betwixt any of this that was like absolute besides breaking your leg and not playing pro hockey and let's just no big deal MBD as the kids say was there a moment in this point with the acting that was like me, I always tell everybody like testing for shows, movies, didn't get them, didn't get them, didn't get them. Tons of rejection. Do you remember, like, was there a moment that happened to you that was just like, oh shit, you know what I mean? Like, how do I keep going? Do you remember one? Was there a pilot? Was there something?
Well,
Like when you finally, because you were
gosh,
working.
you know, I got to tell you, Bonnie, you know, the one thing about, like, for me coming from a competitive, athletic background, you know, like, I've never, like, I've seen, maybe my success for me came from the fact that I, you know, every time I, that happened, it made, it drove me harder. I didn't, I never like, it never like, cause I was, you know, I remember the first, I remember the first thing that I ever really read that I put down and went, oh my God. And it was Shawshank Redemption. I put it on the table and I went, that movie is going to win an Academy Award.
Top 10 movie for me, Desert Island.
That's interesting. I was basically between myself, Gil Bellows, and another guy to play the young guy.
Do you know Gil and I started an acting class together, Sandy Marshall, 20 years ago.
Gil and I did hit our very first movies together in Vancouver, in Canada, right when he won the freaking visa lottery.
Are you still friends with him?
I don't. I mean, yeah, when we see each other, we talk. I don't know him that well. But
20 years ago when I was a waitress, I saw him on stage and he was just fabulous. But you know what? That's an interesting point. Like as a, as an athlete,
right?
You know, for people that are like listening, and a lot of people send me questions like, "How did you get over this? How did you get over that?"
Right.
That's an interesting point. Like that really toughens you up. Like if you can't get up another day, you're never going to make it as an actor.
Right, and also too, you know, your determination, like when it comes to athletics, you know, to be at the level of the hockey I played. There's got to be an innate determination and just a commitment. And so I never, like, it takes a lot to deter me. Yes, I get down. Of course, you wear your heart in your sleeve every time you go in and for a meeting, right? And some meetings you're like, oh, man, I'd just so love to play this character. And you get close, and then they go, wow, they went a different way, right? But, you know, throughout my whole career, though, I just feel like every time that happens, it's just another.
Do you think that's what hockey, do you think that's what your early years, like,
yes,
what hockey taught you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I think so too. It's like, you know, people say like, oh, how do you get through this rejection? I'm like, you know, I was a model, not a good one. I left home at 18. I had a record deal. I moved to LA with $500 and I got rejected for so long. And I truly think that's helped me kind of deal with, you know, like deal with it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, you know, like our journeys and stuff, because, you know, I'm on a TV show called Riverdale where all those kids.
Yes, I wanted to get to Riverdale. Finally. Thank you for bringing it.
Well, here's the thing, but what you said is interesting because all those kids on our show, pretty much that's the first set they've ever been on.
I know.
And they went from basically, hypothetically, Starbucks baristas to international TV stars. Well, that my journey has been way different.
And
right?
What do you think about that? I mean, honestly, like me as an old lady, quote, I often say like some of those kids, like I don't know if they have the longevity that you and I have emotionally. And even like, you know, like looking at my friends' kids and my godchildren, there is a difference in like, it's so different than what you and I went through. Like they literally stepped into like, boom.
Yeah. Yeah. And so they don't know. Now they, you know, I don't know. Like, well, here's an amazing thing. They were lucky to have Luke to talk to throughout this whole building, right? Because Luke was basically, as if, I don't know if you remember, but honestly, really, had you ever met a more gentleman than that man?
No, honestly, I was my
second job. And I've known Luke since we were 23 and to the day that he passed away. And he was the same person. He was the guy that Hollywood could take it away from him and he would go play, he would go work with his blacktop, laying blacktop, right? He was just that guy.
I have to say, Luke Perry, God rest his soul. It was my second job I ever booked. I had just gotten into the union. I had three lines on Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place. I booked this job. I played his girlfriend. I had never kissed anybody. I have to say he was the most loveliest. And I remember his wife and kids visited and I was like envious and not in a bad way, but I was like, I want that. Like he was so concerned with how I felt.
No, he was that way. He was that way on Riverdale.
You know? That must have been so hard for you, the casting. What was that like?
Oh, devastating, you know, devastating because he loved life. He loved people. He loved his family. You know, you just feel so bad for people.
It was a fluke accident. It was just a...
It was, yeah, he just... He was fine. I mean, you know, like the only thing I ever saw, like sometimes Luke had a bit of a bad back and he hated to fly between the cities because it hurt his back a bit. But, you know, no one ever expected what happened, you know.
God, it's like life is just so mm-hmm. you got to appreciate mm-hmm. everything. But yeah, he was an absolute gentleman to me. I was so nervous. I just remember 90210 was like 21 Jump Street. You know, to meet my age, and I was on towards the end, and I was so nervous, and he was so amazing. And yeah. like, you know, I thought everyone was always going to be that amazing. Turns out they're not.
Yeah, not so much. No.
So how do you feel about Riverdale, the whole experience? Like,
it's, you know, the people on the show are great, fabulous. I mean, you know, as an actor, you always hope to be a bigger part of things.
Yeah.
You know, the show's about the four leads, right? It was when I was reading the comics. It was always Archie, Betty, Jughead, you know, Veronica.
Which one were you?
So for me, you know, I just yearn to do more all the time. I want to contribute more, you know.
Is it hard being like you and I, like I've done jobs where now I'm playing, you know, the mom, and sometimes to be honest, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. It was funny because at the table read of Riverdale, Luke and I looked over at each other and we were laughing because we were both like, do you remember when we used to date all these girls? And now we're the dad.
But that said, we're not done. But honestly, I've had moments where I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, but it's amazing to work, and it's such a cult phenomenon. Like,
I'm grateful that the show's big. You know, it's as actors, right? If your face stays out there,
three years out of work. I worked last year twice. I am like, it's humbling, right? It's humbling.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so I'm very grateful for the show. I mean, I would, you know, would I'd rather be number 4 than number 12 or 13? Yeah, of course.
But you're still, you know, like you said, we're not done.
No, I feel like, I'm not there at all yet. So the best is yet to come, but what a great journey, right? Like now we've got 30 years to peel back all of this dimension that we have and then blow it up, right?
Yeah. And hopefully we're going to get back to work. Are you guys shooting now with the COVID or?
Yes. Everything starts back up here because when people come back to Vancouver, you have to quarantine for 14 days. Right. So most things up here start actual first shoot days are around the 18th. So meaning that everyone had to be in town by the 4th to be tested. Yeah.
Sidebar for the people that listen and are so fascinated by my relationship. How have you stayed married and been married for 300,000 years as an actor? Just a little advice for a 46-year-old who's finally getting married.
I think.
What would you say to an old 46-year-old lady who's finally tying the knot?
Well, I think one of it is like you got to have a lot of humor, right? And I don't know. My wife keeps everything humble. She's just, you know, it's like every time I feel like I'm Brad Pitt, she'll tell me to go and, you know, take the garbage out, cut the lawn or, you know, something like that.
That's an amazing.
We have horses. I help them clean up horse poo and the, you know, so I'm just that guy. But what's that?
You have horses?
Yeah, we have a couple of horses. Yeah. Yeah. My daughter's a rider. So.
Oh, she is. So any hockey players?
Yeah. My son plays hockey. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How do we feel about that?
Well, he's pretty good at all sports. I mean, I just love the fact that both of my kids are active and, you know, I have no problem with obviously video games and stuff. It's just something I never did as a kid, but I think it's fine. I just like to have them outside doing stuff as well. I don't want my kids just attached to their phones and computers and televisions all the time. Right. So, I'm happy that actually my son is actually up snowboarding right now with a couple of his friends on Grouse Mountain. Do you know Vancouver that well?
I say to my fiance, I cannot wait to get a job in Vancouver and bring him because he's never been, and he's a skier. He grew up in Denver.
Denver's beautiful too, right?
But like I Vancouver, he is going, I could move there on honestly. And I put this out there in the universe. I would love a job in Vancouver. Right. He would love it. It's such an amazing place, I think, to live and grow up and have kids because it's got everything.
Yeah. It's an amazing city. Mountains, ocean, you name it.
All right. Canucks or Kings?
Canucks. Come on. I love hockey, though. Listen, I'm a big fan of the NHL, but I'm a Canuck fan, right?
Dave just threw that question on the computer. So here's the part of the interview where I'm just going to ask a bunch of random questions.
Yeah. We could go on so much. I'm sure we know so many people.
I don't even want to.
Also, too, you and I have been in the same movie, young lady.
Wait, we're not stopping yet. Dave, by the way, Dave edits. What movie?
Treasure Buddies. You were a voice. I was a character. Because I've known Robert Vince forever. Oh. I've known the Vince's brothers forever, you know, until his brother passed away. But
Anna McRoberts.
Robert Vince and I have been friends for so long.
Oh my God. Yeah. And you know what? And that's another area of acting, too, is the whole voiceover world.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, I haven't done a lot of it, but whenever someone asks me to, I quite enjoy it.
So we talked, we just finished talking about your ridiculously successful marriage. Not that I'm jealous. I am jealous.
Hey, look at you can still put in 30 years.
Really?
Of course you can.
I'm 46. By the way, I'm 46. My fiance runs marathons, just turned 50, has the body of a 30-year-old. And now I'm inspired, but yeah, he says like we got 30, 40 years. So I gotta amp my game. But so as part like the whole second act theory, like what is something else that you feel in your life is another act that was like absolute life changer?
Yeah, definitely the birth of my kids, you know, my first child, my daughter. I mean, you know, it's just all perspective, right? All perspective. And, you know, it's amazing how much, as far as for me, Bonnie, how much that created dimension in characters that I could create now, like just because of that certain energy or that certain thing that it gave me as a human being by having that child.
You know, I'm very interested in that because I don't have kids. So I'm actually fascinated with this. And I always ask my friends, I have five god kids. But as an actor, just fellow actor, like birth of your daughter, how many kids do you have?
Two.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, because people, you know, everybody always says, oh, your life will change. You know, my mom, you know, had me and like, you know, my dad wasn't in my life, but she always says like, I would do it all again because you'll never understand. But like, as an actor, that's an interesting question for me. Like what was it about that you felt as an artist? Like, how did that really actually affect you? Not as a man.
Right.
As an artist, that's an interesting question.
I think it just it opened up another window of what I could bring to characters. I think for me,
like vulnerability, heart,
like that overwhelming presence of unconditional love.
Is that really a thing?
It is.
Is it?
Oh my gosh! Like, yeah, it doesn't. My kids can screw up. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just this. Yeah.
So you think that as an artist, did that make you more?
You know, here's also too, Bonnie, you know, the funny thing is that it also made me as an artist, it made me work a little harder.
Is that just because of the money that you had to support? Just,
yeah, in a sense, like it made me work harder at creating better characters. It made me do my job better. Because I felt exactly that. I'm a one income family, and I'm like, okay, so I'm going to make sure that I'm the best I can be all the time.
And do you think it was also like, now forget not only the one income family, but like, because I feel this not the same as a mother, but I feel this like I want the people I love to be proud of.
Absolutely, yeah, that's
and that motivates me now.
Yeah. Yeah, that as well. Yeah, for sure.
All right. I want to ask you a few questions. Ready? Who is, and you could pass.
Right.
But I don't want you to pass. Okay.
Okay.
Who is the best hockey player amongst the actors that you've played with?
Me.
Good answer.
Sorry. There's some pretty good ones, you know, like Matt Perry, Dave Cooley.
I did Friends with Matt Perry.
David Kelly's actually pretty good.
Is he?
Yeah.
How is Michael
Barton? David Kelly was the captain of his hockey team in Princeton.
Wow, fancy. Yeah. How is Michael Vartan? Because he was really into it.
He was okay. I mean, you know, here's the thing. These are all guys that can skate and that played like minor hockey and stuff. But, you know, there actually is one guy that I haven't played with, but he actually played years later on one of the junior teams that I played with. And his name is Taylor Kish. You know, the kid from Friday Night Lights with the long hair, you know, yep. He would probably be someone who's pretty good, I would imagine.
I love to answer you. Okay.
But I've always been lucky to be picked first. Let's put it that way.
Canadians, so humble. Okay. Being that you've had so many acts, athlete, musician, husband, dad, actor, soundtrack, you've done all, the same as me. Okay. What is the one thing, like we said, we're not done yet. What is the one thing creatively that you want that you have not done yet?
Definitely to be able to tell a story of the movies that I've been moved by. I want creatively to touch people the way that I've been touched in some of my favorite movies.
And now, do you mean, because I want this, that too. Do you mean role of writer, director, actor, or producer? What role would you like?
Well, I think for me, I think my best asset right now would be to probably perform. You know, I mean, yes, I think I'm ready to direct. I really do. Writing, man, it's amazing to me, Bonnie, right? To think how many scripts we've read over our careers. But yet when I sit down to pen something, I'm like, where do I start? It's like I've read a million freaking scripts and I'm like, where do I start? How do I write out an intro into my first act?
Lachlan, right? I have this idea that Dave and I are writing, my fiance and I are writing, that Angie has heard about for so long. And our first date, Dave was like, let's do it. People are like, why haven't you done it? Same. It's like, how do I know I can do punch-ups. I can do joke. How can I?
Absolutely. 30 years, it's so I can't funny. See. I can take a scene in a script while I'm on set and go, hey, what if we did this and did that? And it's like, hey, it's pretty good. Because, but man, to start from scratch, that's why it's always funny, you know, when actors go, so this struggle is killing me. You know what? I'm just going to write my own thing. And I'm like, okay.
But you know what? That's not our. Okay. So here's a question. That creative story that you want to tell that has moved you, mm-hmm. What if you could pick one of the stories or genres above all, if somebody said, okay, Lachlan, I'm going to give you this money, I'm going to do. Right. And I know that's a tough question because I feel like we're alike. Like I have like music. What would be the story that you would want to tell star in?
I don't know. It would have to be a human struggle and you know, the first movie that I can remember that really moved me before I ever even thought about being in the movies.
Let me guess.
Was Midnight Express.
Oh.
Like unbelievable, right? That human, like being put in a Turkish prison and just surviving. Like I never had drama where I grew up. I didn't know what acting was. But I remember that movie and I remember talking about that movie and I was the only one in my group that ever talked about movies. Everyone else would go, you know, it's like, oh, went to the movie, had some fun, went down to the park, have a beer. Let's talk about some girls. Let's talk about this. I'd be talking about the movie.
That's right? Like me growing up in Brooklyn. I mean, I didn't grow up where you grew up, but I grew up in Flatbush, which it was a small town in a, nobody was an artist. Right. It was like, you're a jock. Or you get married. And nobody, these artistic questions, it was just like, I was, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's also part of why we're probably seekers, right?
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, we're seekers. For sure. Yeah.
You have an amazing attitude. And I think, again, this goes back to like the whole second act thing. You and I have had many acts. We've had rejection. We've had failure. You've had, you know, breaking your leg. I've had dropped record deals. Like, I just think it makes us better. And so I always tell people that's kind of how I'm still standing. You know what I mean? Is that we've been through it.
Totally. Yeah. No, I just, I can't, I'm just sort of.
You have an amazing attitude. And I don't say this just because you're Canadian.
You know what the thing is? I've always been definitely, definitely been a half glass full person, right?
Good.
Always. Even even when you face adversity or whatever, I've always kind of just dealt with it like that. So I don't know, maybe I've been fortunate. Maybe that's something I inherited from my family. I don't know, just my personality, but
that's amazing. And that's part of why I'm doing this podcast, is because it's like, you know, I was at the lowest low.
Right.
And I just was like, God, and you know, never thought, I mean, engage, like,
yeah.
You know, my life has changed so much.
Yeah, that's
so great talking to you. You're awesome.
Oh, so are you.
Tell everybody where they can find you, please.
Where they can find me?
Twitter and Instagram, yeah.
Well, oh yeah. Well, I don't know if they want to find me. I'm not very good at that stuff, but.
Oh, you're pretty.
It's always just my own name, Lachlan Monroe.
Lachlan.
So here's a little tidbit. Okay, so. My first name is Richard. My middle name is Lachlan. My grandfather was Lachlan. My dad was Richard. So I was born kind of going as Lachie. And then my mom decided that she wanted me to be a Richard Jr. So I actually spent a lot of my childhood as Ricky. Ricky, yeah. And then when I was getting into the film industry, my agent found out that my middle name was Lachlan and that I'd gone by Lachlan before. And that is where I switched back to my middle name. But the real spelling of my middle name is L-A-U-G-H-L-A-I-N. That is the Scottish spelling. The way that I spell it is a little more Irish, but phonetically that's how people can pronounce it, because forever I've always got Laughlin or Loughlin.
Well, it is a very sexy name. I'll tell you one small anecdote. I was doing a movie with Jerry Butler. I played his sister, and he's Scottish, and I'm half Scottish, Scotch-Irish.
Yeah. Paul.
And I was trying to like meet him, and I was like trying to be all buddy. And I was like, hey, I'm Scottish, you know? Bonnie Somerville, right? Like, and I thought Somerville was such a cool name. Bonnie is obviously Bonnie Lass. It's not cool. But I thought Somerville was a cool name. And he was like, I can't do the accent. You can. But he was like, basically, it's like Smith in Scotland. Like, it's not like there's S-O-M-M, there's S-U-M-M, but it's not a big deal. And I thought my entire life it was special, but he was like, oh, no.
That's so
funny. And also Bonnie Lass, not that special.
You know, I have a funny Jerry Butler story, because we were shooting the movie Dracula 2000. And we were on the movie, we were shooting it, and we were all like, who the fuck is Dracula? Like, they hadn't cast Dracula yet. So I'm on there with Omar Epps and Danny Masterson and Jennifer Esposito, all these people were like, so who's Dracula? They're like, oh, we haven't found one yet. Then finally one day the director goes, we found our Dracula. We're like, who is it? They go, well, he's a Scottish guy. He just finished playing Attila the Hun in a miniseries. And we're like, okay. Yeah, what's his name? His name is Gerard Butler. And we're like, okay. So the first day I meet him, I just was like, are you kidding me? You're a handsome Scottish rogue.
Was this after 300?
Oh, this before. There's no one knew who he was.
Oh, so he didn't have the body though.
He was tall and lean and
yeah, but
absolutely charming and, you know, like everything Jerry is, right?
Yeah. How do you know the movie I did with him? He didn't have that 300, like he had like a pouch.
And
he would joke about it. And I would make jokes and go, I thought I was playing the sister of, you know, like, where's that guy? You know what I mean? But yeah, He's a great guy. But yeah. I thought my whole life, Bonnie Somerville, and I thought he'd be impressed. And he was like, oh, last night, I can't see it.
It's not that great.
It's not that great.
It's not that great, Bonnie.
See? Wait, do a little. Go. As we end this podcast, give me a little, say something nice to me as we end in the Scottish accent, because I love it so much.
You got it.
Go ahead. Action.
Bonnie, it's been great talking to you, and I hope that we can do it again sometime soon. You're wonderful.
Oh God, don't be jealous, babe. Don't be jealous.
Hey, Dave's from Denver, man. He's got nothing to be jealous.
No, but he's Scottish, Dave McLean.
Oh, I love that. McLean. You know, John McLean was the lead in Die Hard, right? You know, it's funny that you say that.
Okay, hang on. He's pointing at me to end this podcast to make Dave, my fiance, happy. We had an argument on Christmas Eve. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not?
No.
Oh.
Sorry, Dave.
Sorry, Dave.
I'm going to edit this part.
Nope, it's not. Thank you, Lachlan. Thank you. That was awesome. I love that guy. He's so honest. He's so such a warm and honest and kind and insightful human being, and so down to earth. And I love telling you these stories with actors, and so that you could hear the other side of like what actually happens, what we go through, and how it's so not glamorous, and how it's so hard and sometimes devastating, and then sometimes so unbelievably just like such a high. I cannot wait for his new series. Watch for him. He has a leading role on this new HBO Max series called Peacemaker, which looks amazing. And this is a good example of you just never know. I mean, you know, you break your femur bone and then you join a band and you start start acting and you audition. And the next thing you know, you're on 21 Jump Street. I mean, who knows? Who knows what your second act is going to be? That's why you got to keep going. I hope these stories continue to inspire you. Don't forget to give me that review so I could keep going. And don't forget to download and subscribe. And also follow me. Again, it is second_act_podcast. Send me your questions. And I hope that you all have an amazing day and you're happy and healthy. Lots of love.